Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Thursday, June the 30th. Good morning and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideu in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, South Sudan says a new rebel group has launched attacks on government troops. But what is the rebel group fighting for?
It could be that this has been sparked by the situation of armed groups trying to simply fend for themselves.
The UN peacekeeping mission in Liberia, UNMIL, wraps up its operation after 13 years.
Everything is not perfect, but we think that with the support and with the functioning of all the different structures, they should be ready to take care of the future.
These stories, plus Ghanaian small-scale farmers decry land grabbing by big agricultural corporations. Stay tuned.
Top story.
Back to square one. South Sudanese officials say a new rebel group led by veteran politician Ali Tamim Fartak has clashed with government troops in the remote Wau region. More than 40 people have died while tens of thousands have fled to UN camps. This comes as the South Sudanese government announced that it had cancelled Independence Day celebrations due to the ongoing economic crisis. Peter Schumann is the former director of the UN mission in Sudan, and he's been telling me more about this new rebel group.
I don't think it's a new rebel group. We always had a very sort of dicey constellation in Wau, where we had seen clashes between the SPLM under the government, the SPLM under the opposition leadership. But then there was also sort of local groups which had sort of played their own game. In my view, they are neither with the government nor with the opposition. They're playing a local role, a regional role, which is not very uncommon at the moment in other parts also of South Sudan.
And what would be their objectives then?
From my reading, we see there are a lot of soldiers of militia people are not paid. So they are out to simply loot, destroy, and finance support themselves. We have seen that the WFP food relief is stuck, not reaching Wau. The situation, the economic situation there seems to be very, very bad. So It could be that this has been sparked by the situation of armed groups trying to simply fend for themselves.
The South Sudanese government says that this rebel group, whether it's new or not, that it has an Islamist fundamentalist ideology. How true are these claims?
I'm very skeptical. I don't think that this is sort of, especially Wau. Wau is not really a place for these kind of things to happen. Unless there are so-called foreign fighters, but there are no reports of any foreign fighters, I don't think that this is substantiated. It could be that the government is trying to play this card, but I have not seen any sort of substantive, independently verified information to this effect.
Okay, now let's talk about the political and security situation in the country in regard to the peace deal that was signed. But we still see that there are still hundreds, if not thousands, of refugees still camped at UN camps.
Yeah.
When will we start seeing life beginning to return to normal in South Sudan?
I think we're far away from this. I think we will see a lot more instability. We will see a lot more these kind of militia groups, armed, marauding groups going around harassing the population. The latest figures I have received through UNHCR that we have about 700,000 to 800,000 refugees in neighboring countries, with the largest number now in Sudan. Maybe half of the population is on the move, fleeing from hunger, from starvation, from uncontrolled violence. And there is nothing in sight which hints towards stability.
Former director of UN mission to Sudan, Peter Schumann. Let's stay with the issue of refugees. About 70,000 of them are camping at the Yida refugee camp close to its northern border with Sudan. South Sudan's government has given the UN Agency for Refugees, UNHCR, until today, June the 30th, to end operations in Yida. But the displaced people have shown little interest in relocating. Laura Wagenknecht is in South Sudan and brings us this report.
Since the war in the Nuba Mountains in Sudan started in 2011, thousands of Nuba people made their way to South Sudan. They settled close to the border in a place the locals called Yida. They built a market, workshops, houses and schools. Every morning at the Yusuf Kuba Primary School in Yida refugee camp begins with 2,000 students singing a national anthem of sorts. Their song celebrates the Nuba Mountains. But although there are 70,000 Nuba refugees living here, the UN does not recognize Yida as an official refugee camp and therefore does not support education. The teachers at Yusuf Kuba are volunteers. Sambo Kuba is in charge of primary education at Yida. He oversees 8 schools.
You're supposed to support education here as emergency education. That's what I know in the convention of what? Of UN. But the UN yourself, you refuse to what? Support education, even emergency education.
Fatoumata Lejoun Kaba heads the UN's operation in Yida. She sees the main problem with the location of Yida.
Basically, Yida is not a refugee camp. It's a refugee settlement because refugees have settled here. This should have never been. You just don't settle refugees in the middle of a military zone, period. But of course, nobody settled them, they came. The government asked us to close down our operations in Yida by the 30th of June. The government is responsible for the safety of refugees and they want to make sure that refugees are assisted where it's safer.
Yida is 15 kilometers from Sudan. This part of the border is controlled by the SPLA North Rebels and the SPLA forces of South Sudan. The rebels fought alongside the South Sudanese in the decades-long liberation struggle against Khartoum. When the lines of the newly independent South Sudan were drawn, the Nuba Mountains were left on the Sudanese side of the border. Since then, the Sudan government has tried to flush out the rebels with a bombing campaign. Hundreds of civilian targets, schools, homes, hospitals have been hit.
That report was compiled by Laura Wagenknecht.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Turning the page. After devastating back-to-back civil wars in Liberia, the UN launched a peacekeeping mission in September 2003 to ensure security, rebuild police and military forces from scratch, and disarm the rebels. On Thursday, June the 30th, the mission known as UNMIL finally hands back security to Liberia. But is the West African country ready to take on such a responsibility? This is the question I put to Valdemar Vray, the officer in charge of UNMIL.
Yes, indeed. We have been deployed since 2003 as a peacekeeping mission in Liberia, and we have been working subsequently very hard in the areas that you have mentioned. For the past 13 years, we have invested quite a bit in the capacity building of the different institutions. Particularly in the last 24 months, we have paid a very strong focus on the transition from the UN to the government of Liberia. And yes, we think everything is not perfect. Probably every country's security institutions will let you know that they don't have everything that they need. But we think that with the support and with the functioning of all the different structures, they should be ready to take care of the future.
When you do the handing over ceremony on Thursday, who exactly are you handing over to? Is it the police? Is it the military? Who exactly will be in charge now of security in Liberia?
The military has also been built from scratch, but this has mostly been a bilateral support that they have received from the United States of America. They have built a small army that is capable of ensuring the sovereignty of Liberia. The United Nations has focused mostly on the Liberian National Police and the Bureau for Immigration and Naturalization to provide support to them. Let me say that is in the law and order environment where we have focused. So we would be looking at them assuming responsibilities for security by the 1st of July. So it's not an overnight handover that takes place on the 1st of July, but actually a culmination of a well-planned transition process that culminates on the 1st of July.
The Ebola outbreak highlighted the fragility and vulnerability of Liberian institutions. And ANMIL, as you said earlier on, has been trying to strengthen these institutions. Isn't ANMIL now taking a big gamble by simply pulling out of Liberia?
You are correct in saying that this terrible crisis has delayed many of the activities that we wanted to have in place, and it required really an extraordinary national focus from Liberia to deal and overcome the challenges of Ebola. What we saw during this time was really a nation pulling together rather than fragmenting. And, you know, the way in which they, as a nation, responded to the threat of Ebola has actually contributed to the confidence we have that they can and do have the ability to pull things together.
Officer in charge of the UN mission to Liberia, Valdemar Vray. Still to come, a repeat of the Learning by Ear radio drama on migration to Europe. But now, over 1,000 farmers in northern Ghana risk being turned into squatters. They have been asked to vacate their land without compensation to pave way for a large-scale agricultural project. As Maxwell Sook reports, the deal has led Parliament to introduce a bill aimed at protecting the farmers.
Two bulldozers are busy clearing mass tracts of farmlands at Nasia, a farming community in northern Ghana. A couple of weeks ago, farmers here staged a strong protest against the move by an investor to claim their lands without due compensation. Isahaku, one of the farmers, told me they were willing to do everything to protect their land.
We were prepared to fight them with all our weapons. We are not educated and we don't have any skills apart from farming, and taking the land means killing the entire community.
Most of the land in Ghana is owned by customary holdings. Most of the owners have little knowledge of land rights, making it easy to fall prey to land grabbing. Sumani, another farmer, told me land grabbing is unfair.
We inherited the lands from our grandfathers. All our generations' farms are on those lands. You can't even sell it. So why do they want to take it from us?
Sumani's concern is as a result of an agreement between the Ghanaian government and a private-public partnership. The deal aims to cultivate thousands of hectares with rain-fed commercial agriculture in the savanna ecological zones. Farmer Latif says they were deceived about the whole deal.
We were told that those of us whose farms were affected, that they would negotiate with us, but later we saw them with their machines, and no negotiation. That is why we resisted.
To protect people with allodial title deeds, the Lands Commission has proposed a land protection bill. Suleimana Mahama, technical director in charge of lands, Ghana's Ministry of Lands and Natural Resources, explains.
What we are trying to do is to prevent the deprivation of people's rights to land. The bill has made provisions to ensure that vast tracts of land that may be needed for economic projects are done in such a way that the interests of the local citizens are also protected.
That report was compiled by Maxwell Sook in Tamale, northern Ghana. The Promised Land, a Learning by Ear radio drama on African migration to Europe, is up next. Enjoy the action.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Learning by Ear. This is the third episode of our ongoing radio drama, The Promised Land, a Story of African Migration to Europe. In the previous episode, Linda had a challenging interview at the embassy, but luckily, she succeeded in getting a visa. She was surprised to learn that her father had already bought her plane ticket. She's due to leave this coming weekend. Her boyfriend, Chivasi, seemed to have come to terms with her departure. He spoke to her on the phone and accepted an invitation for supper with Linda and her parents. Meanwhile, on the North African coast, Farahani has come up with a plan to sneak into Europe undetected by border guards, and Sule has reluctantly agreed to join him on this adventure. So what's in store today? Sit down, relax, and enjoy today's episode called The Lucky and the Unlucky. It's dawn in North Africa, and the sun is slowly rising. Farahani and Sule are already up and preparing for their journey.
Sule, hurry up. Our contact is waiting in the car outside. We are late.
I can't find my money, Farahani. Huh? Have you seen my wallet? I can't pay for the car journey if I don't find my wallet.
Well, where did you put it? Hurry, Sule. You know that for these people, timing is everything.
I had it here somewhere, but now I can't find it. Farahani, please, will you pay for me? Once we get to Europe, I'll pay you back.
Sule, what do you take me for? A fool? I've been waiting for this day all my life, and here you are trying to ruin everything for me.
Farahani, come on. We are friends. We are more like brothers, really. Please, help me, eh? And in a few months, I'll pay you back your money.
Sule, I can't help you. The money I have is only just enough for me. The transport fee has gone up even for people who live near the coast. We are supposed to pay about 1,000 euros each. That's all I have. I'm sorry, brother. I'll have to leave you behind.
No, please, Farahani, please. Talk to the driver. He will understand.
Oh, don't worry, Sule. Just pray for a safe and successful journey for me and the others. Once we get to Europe and things work out over there, I will send for you. Goodbye, Sule, my friend. Bye.
Farahani, please, don't leave me.
Hey, wait for me. Wait for me.
The sight of Farahani chasing after the pickup van full of migrants made Sule bust out laughing. But Farahani isn't just chasing a van. He's chasing his dream, his ticket to Europe. Will he catch up with them and proceed on his journey? Keep listening to find out. Later that day, on the other side of the continent, Chivasi is standing at the front door of the Maraga family house, an invited guest, to say farewell to Linda as she prepares to fly to Europe for her studies.
That must be Chivasi. The dog never liked him.
That dog is not the only one. Your mother doesn't like Chivasi either. I hope she doesn't hear me from the kitchen.
I know, Dad. Come on, let me open the door for him. Spotty, stop that. Stop it.
Excuse me. Is this the home of one Linda Maraga?
No, I'm sorry, young man. I think you must be lost.
You're right, young lady. I really am lost without her.
I think she's lost without you too. Come in. My parents are waiting.
Good evening, Mr. Maraga.
Aha, hello, Chivasi. Oh, come on in. Darling, we are all here.
Oh, hi, Chivasi. Okay, it's self-service now, so please help yourself.
Everything smells so good.
Chivasi, what are your plans?
Well, I don't really have a plan at the moment. I've only just finished university.
Jesus, don't you want to continue with your studies?
Can we talk about something else, please?
Sure, Mrs. Maraga. I'd love to. It's just that right now, it's just not possible for me. You know, my parents can't afford it, and my other brothers and sisters are still at school. So I need to get a job quickly to help support my parents and family.
Chivasi is coming with us to the airport to see me off.
Oh, is he?
Oh, am I?
Oh, sure, why not? You're like family to us, Chivasi.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you, Mr. Maraga.
And as soon as I finish my studies and come home, we intend to get married.
Chivasi almost choked when he heard those words, not to mention Linda's parents. But their surprise soon turned into joy. After a few days of anxiety and anticipation, the time came for Linda to leave. At the airport, she was surrounded by her parents, relatives, friends, classmates, and of course, Chivasi. But before we see her off, let's find out how Farahani is coping after missing his chance to migrate to Europe. He hasn't seen Sule since that day, but they're about to bump into each other in a cyber cafe.
Internet, please.
How long?
Half an hour.
Computer number 3, on the left. You have to pay first.
Farahani, is that you? I'm so sorry about...
Not now, Sule. Let's talk when I've finished.
But you're not mad at me, are you?
No, I'm not. Everything happens for a reason. Maybe it just wasn't the right time.
That's true. I never thought of it in that way. Maybe I was acting as your guardian angel.
Okay, guardian angel. Wait here. I'll be right back. Mm-hmm.
Some people are lucky enough to be born in wealthy families or moderately well-off ones like Linda's. But some, like Chivasi, are not. And for others, like Farahani and Sule, life is even harder. One option is to go where life seems better. Farahani has wasted no time in setting up another trip. His contacts are human traffickers, people smugglers, who are willing to ferry anyone to Europe illegally for a prize. Meanwhile, Linda is sitting tightly buckled into her plane seat, feeling nervous. Next to her is Florence, a 30-something lady married to a European, who's flying back to Europe after visiting her family.
Welcome on board our flight number 7896. My name is Captain Smith. The plane is now ready for takeoff, so please fasten your seat belts and bring your seats into an upright position. Cabin crew, please take your seats and get ready for takeoff.
Is this the first time you've flown?
Yes, this is my first time.
Oh, don't worry, you'll enjoy it. I'm Florence, by the way, but you can call me Flo.
Ah, hi. My name is Linda. Linda Maraga.
Pleasure to meet you, Linda. So, I imagine you're going to see a boyfriend, maybe?
No. I just said goodbye to my boyfriend at the airport. I'm going to Europe to continue my studies.
Wow, that's wonderful. I mean, your studies, not the boyfriend thing. I'm sure it must be hard for you both.
Yes, it is. But we're going to get married when I finish my studies.
And when exactly do you finish?
In 3 years' time. I'm studying international law.
3 years? Okay.
Florence?
Yep.
I know we've only just met, but may I say, I really like your dress. And your shoes and gold necklace are lovely too.
Thank you, Linda. You know what? Mm-hmm. I like you. And because I like you, I'm going to give you my number. If you need anything, you know, if you just want to hang out with your own people, mm-hmm. you give me a call, okay?
Thank you very much, Flo. I really appreciate it.
Don't mention it. Enjoy the flight, Linda.
And as Linda's plane takes off into the African skies on its way to Europe, we end this third episode of our Learning by Ear series on migration from Africa to Europe. Linda seems to have warmed to Florence, but is this friendly woman really someone she can trust? What awaits Linda when she arrives in Europe? Back at home, how will Chivasi cope with his girlfriend's departure? In North Africa, what does Farahani plan to do after failing to make it with the rest of the illegal migrants? All this and more in our next episode. Join us in our online discussion at facebook.com/dw.lbe to discuss the emotional side of having to say goodbye to a family member, a person you love, or friends who have migrated. You can also listen to this episode and others in the series by visiting our homepage at dw.de/destinationeurope. Until next time, goodbye.
And now here's a reminder of our main story. South Sudan says a new rebel group is fighting government troops in the remote Wau region. And in other news, the UN says it will strengthen its mission in Mali with an additional 2,500 troops, while Angola says it will release 17 young activists detained for alleged anti-government activities. Do write to us with your comments on the stories we have aired by sending a text message to country code 49160-957-59510, an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. I'm Crispin Mwakideo. Take care.